And welcome to the 222nd edition of our Economic Forum show entitled Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Today's show is Christmas Rally. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money matters. Is about money. Is money does matter, and matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, and controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, money matters is about you. Thanks for joining me today on your Economic Forum show on your community radio station. So 2 weeks ago, I was here asking for condolences for the people in Paris. And here we sit, 2 weeks later, asking again for the sympathies and condolences from the listening public on another mass shooting. What we know, around 11 a.m. on Wednesday, of course, two assailants opened fire in San Bernardino at a party in the Inland Regional Center. 14 people were killed, 21 wounded. The motive is unknown, so says LATimes.com. President Obama, in a statement from the Oval Office today, said the shooting was possibly related to terrorism, but might also be workplace-related. Police say some degree of planning, of course. The shooters were heavily armed and had tactical attire. Two suspects were killed, Saeed Rizwan Farouk and Tashin Malik. A third person was detained, but might not be connected to the shooting. Okay. There you go. So, onward. The market today is down, somewhere around, 260 points as I do this newscast. Let's take a look. Thursday, December 3rd, 2015 at noon Pacific Standard Time. And nobody knows for sure. Market's down 260, yes. However, out on Yahoo Finance this morning, their opinion says that U.S. stocks were lower today as European central banks cut the discount rate minimally. They cut it by 10 basis points. It was expected to be 25. And they extended their stimulus programs. However, they only decided to extend it 6 months. ECB decided to extend its asset purchase program, quantitative easing, until March 2017, but did not increase its size. Okay, so more quantitative easing for even longer into March 2017. And I would ask you, when did we start quantitative easing? 2008, 2009? And so here we are, 6 years into it? And they're going to continue it. And because they're going to continue it longer than they said they were going to continue it yesterday, but not as long as the market may have expected, the Dow is reacting. So says Yahoo Finance. You have to wonder, how long will they do this? How long will it take? Or will it ever take? Would be my question. So out in the news, the corporate inversion, we've talked about that on Money Matters before. Corporate inversion, it's when a U.S. company merges with a foreign one. And the end result, of course, is the corporation changes its country of origin from the United States to another country. Often this is done to take advantage of the lower income tax rates offered by other countries, as the U.S. corporate tax rate is the highest in the world. Corporate inversion is legal, of course, and the latest company doing it is U.S. pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, who has just merged with Ireland-based Allergan. Deal is worth somewhere in the area of $160 billion, will create the largest drug company by sales in the world, and is the largest inversion deal ever undertaken. U.S. tax rate for Pfizer is estimated in the U.S. at 35%, but as an Ireland-based company, its rates drops 12.5%, so say the folks at Uncommon Wisdom Daily. The new company will be officially based in Dublin, Ireland, although Pfizer will still trade here in the U.S. under its current stock symbol, PFE, on the New York Stock Exchange. The inversion, like many other illustrate corporate views on U.S. tax rates when compared to every other country in the world. In English, as long as rates here in the U.S. remain the highest in the land, more companies may do what they do, try to legally maximize shareholder profits. And if moving out helps the bottom line, more companies might consider it. Ireland's economy has not seen such active economic activity since the boom days of the so-called Celtic Tiger. And this latest inversion, Ireland will welcome Pfizer and its bottom line profits. Washington is not asleep on this sort of thing, of course, and catcalls for unfair and pay your fair share being heard in our Ivy Halls by some lawmakers. Some elected officials otherwise point to inversion as proof the U.S. tax rate is onerous, while others say anyone leaving U.S. shores should pay up in spite of their moving. It is said money moves to friendlier shores, and this latest inversion by Pfizer may be proof of that. And 12 of the largest players in the interest rate swap arena are being sued by the Chicago School Teachers Pension Fund, according to Bloomberg. Interest rate swaps, they're essentially bets called derivatives by large investors, large players, to guard against moves in interest rates, which could hurt returns on investments that are sensitive to interest rates, such as fixed income securities, maybe bonds, real estate investment trusts, preferred stocks, and other types. These are typically regarded as fixed income. Fixed income meaning they pay a particular rate, interest rate. That's a favorite of pension plans and other large funds, of course. When you pay a fixed interest rate, when interest rates rise, since the interest rates on fixed income are basically fixed, the price of the fixed income asset itself will drop to illustrate the higher rates that you could get if you went somewhere else. The lawsuit alleges three large players. The lawsuit alleges these large players block free access to the derivative markets where interest rate swaps are traded, and do so to monopolize costs and profits, so say the suit, alleged. This interest rate swap market is not small potatoes. Total value of interest rate swaps outstanding, according to the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS, is about $320 trillion, with a T. Financial institutions have paid billions to settle past claims of similar accusations. So says Bloomberg, and one would have to ask, where there's smoke, is there fire? Defendants Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, Tradeweb, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, UBS Group, Barclays, PCL, Credit Suisse Group AD, and Deutsche Bank AG declined to comment, concludes the Bloomberg article written by Joel Rosenblatt, dated November 25, 2015. This is not the first time banking institutions have been accused of wrongdoing. This is not the first time banking institutions have been accused of wrongdoing, of course, and probably won't be the last. My comments there. Notice I said probably, not will be the last, or may not be the last, or will not be the last. Probably. Okay. Who, me? And months ago, I penned an article, did a show called Retail Wipeout. In it, I detailed how online shopping allow consumers to immediately compare product features, read actual user reviews, and finally find the absolute lowest price. My first Retail Wipeout article and media and show that I did was basically saying that the big box stores, like the ones you're familiar with, I guess it would be the Costco's and the Walmart's, those are typically regarded as big box stores, were hurting mom and pop stores down your street because you could go to the big box stores and they would compete with the smaller stores. And we did see, you know, a lot of mom and pop stores put out for lease signs as they folded under to the pressure that was attributed to the big box stores. Well, this new Retail Wipeout that I'm talking about now is going to be now aiming its sights at the superstores, the big box stores. Now, hear me out here. No longer confined by location, online retailers now, have enhanced shipping features, which allows the cost of transporting the product to you to be at the absolute lowest, if not free altogether. Consumers can now shop from the comfort of their own home and forego the hassles of driving, parking, shopping lines, and you can literally shop boundary free. Sometimes you can shop as far away as across the country, all the time it takes to punch a few keystrokes. The gist of the article and the gist of my Retail Wipeout is that the new ways of shopping would decimate not only the mom and pop storefronts, much like the big box stores decimated this mom and pop. Now the online shopping could put pressure on the big box stores, as did Walmart and Costco and other superstores put pricing pressure on small retailers, retail stores, fronts in our neighborhood, in your neighborhood perhaps, went vacant. Consumers could now buy the majority of their staples from a big box store, and you could buy many of your staples at one location, such as a big box store. The result over time was a retail wipeout with literally thousands of small retail stores going out of business. This new Retail Wipeout, it's not really new, but it's a continuation and an enhancement of the previous Retail Wipeout I covered, except now the victims may be the big box stores themselves. Mainly the same thing that brought us the last wipeout, convenience and price advantage. Online shopping may now put pressure on the superstores themselves, and for the exact same reason, price and convenience. With online retailer Amazon offering free or reduced shipping and many others following suit, and the expansion of online retail product lines to encompass things not originally available through them, spanning the wide variety of products you might buy, like food, clothing, just about everything else, the consumer may have even more reason to forego the trip to their local mall or even their superstore to buy even more online, not only saving time and hassle, but possibly saving money as well, without travel costs, saving time by never stepping outside your door to shop. The consumer can now even compare superstores against each other. Although the super box stores of the world profited through largesse, now that same largesse could be heaping costs onto them that the online retailers may not have, or may not have as much of. It's cheaper to operate an order website and maintain super shipping warehouses, then cater to consumers through large retail outlets that require huge parking lots, buildings that cater to live bodies and all that that encompasses, and requiring staffs of hundreds of employees per store. Fully automated online ordering and improvements like robotic packers help reduce the number of employees. The building and maintenance costs for a live retail superstore is reduced, and a host of other costs that the big online retailer may avoid. Maintaining a huge inventory at multiple locations, such as superbox stores do, is now minimized through online retailers. And instead of floor samples taking up valuable space, an online photo on a website takes its place. In some cases, these online retailers don't even have to have the item in stock. They just need to be able to get it in a reasonable amount of time, saving even more money in the process by reducing their inventory costs. With talk of drone deliveries and even grander retailers like Alibaba, who sell anything from widgets to witch brooms, online retailers look to threaten even the biggest of super box stores, who now must also migrate their business online just to compete. Although some products and services will still require a trip to your local storefront, the further expansion of online retailers and the products they sell will only make things likely harder for the superstore. Case in point, one of the larger big box stores just reported disappointing earnings, and their forecast for future earnings didn't help. Not all of the big box store problems are likely stemming from online competition, of course, but certainly online competitors are not helping. Among other reasons for this super box store's cutting its earnings, it stated it had incurred additional costs to establish new technologies to compete with online retailers. And there you go. And you're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thank you so much for joining me today. Well, as mentioned previously, European Central Bank has dropped interest rates a little bit further. And of course, that mirrors some of the things we see from central banks worldwide. Let's talk about interest rates for a minute. The Federal Reserve here, with interest rates, have not only nailed rates to the floor, they have parked a Mack truck on top of them to be sure the head of the interest rate nail doesn't rise up or work itself loose somehow. Historically, interest rates are rarely kept near zero for long, no matter who tries it. It's historically hasn't been a perfect record as fixing economic problems. Low rates can help foster spending, as the lower rates they are, the more people can borrow, and the amount they borrow can be increased as the interest rate they pay on the debt, of course, is lower. But lower rates can also cause massive distortions in markets and inflate bubbles in various asset classes. Something or somebody blew a gargantuan bubble in the real estate sector not long ago, which almost blew up the world's banking systems. I say someone or something because these things just don't happen by circumstance. Bubbles need fuel, and someone or something has to provide that fuel, and the fuel for bubbles is money. Low interest rates add fuel to the fire, so to speak, and when you add in massive quantitative easing, what you end up is a forest full of dead wood, debt, looking for a match to set it all ablaze. The forest, of course, is the market, and the fuel being all that easy money. When the last forest fire caught fire in 2008, as the fire raged through the markets, burning everything financial in its path, the central bankers of the world sought to extinguish the blaze. No controlled burn for this group, of course. Some argue if the central banks of the world had done nothing, the resulting recession would have cleared some of the rot from the forest floor. Recessions get rid of debt. Depressions get rid of even more debt, through default or through fire sales, of course. Recessions and depressions wipe clean bad debt through painful, but some argue necessary bankruptcies of companies who overindulged in debt. Since the 2008 and 2009 blow-up, the Feds have kept rates near zero and initiated massive quantitative easing, and of course the European Central Bank today will extend their quantitative easing and drop rates even further. They're in the negative right now. European Central Bank rates are negative. Anytime financial fires ignite, historically the central banks of the world initiate more QE and put off raising rates one more time. And of course the ECB did that again today. Wall Street players, of course, love frolicking in the woods of free money from the Fed and the central banks, plodding to and fro, raking in the bounty while literally dancing on the doorsteps of the devil, tempting fate with each passing day as possible bubbles blow even bigger from quantitative easing and lower interest rates. Fast forward to today, and by their own admission, central bankers appear to want to turn down the money spigots, although turning down the money spigots is when our Federal Reserve threatens to raise rates, but ECB actually opened the spigot a little larger. But like stoking a smoldering fire pit, when you initiate lower rates, are you adding more fuel to the fire? And if you are raising interest rates, like our central bank wants to do possibly this month, do you risk setting ablaze the fuel that they have strewn about the forest in the form of massive quantitative easing? Are the zero interest rates allowing even more fuel to add to a possible financial blaze, should one ignite? If a financial fire does break out, will they again dump more QE and keep rates low again to squelch the flames? Will a redo of the policies they have tried many times before? If they do it one more time, will it fix it once and for all? Or if after repeated attempts with no success, will they abandon the policies of QE and abandon the low rates and try something new? I don't know. What do you think? With the November Federal Reserve meeting behind us, it has left in its wake a market that complained bitterly by moving down almost relentlessly over a span of a week or so. A few weeks back, dropping about 3.5% at the time I wrote this, off a high of about 17,800. The Dow is now down 300, back down to 17,435. Markets convulsed, headed up, then convulsing again, now headed down, as stronger Fed speak indicated that December interest rates would likely be increased. However, the ECB lowered theirs. If the Fed did increase rates, we would see the first increase in about 7 years here. One would think, with so many promises by the Fed to raise rates in the last few years or so, that would have been baked into the market's price, but apparently not. Perhaps the Fed has threatened to raise rates so many times and didn't now leave market participants doubting the Fed's resolve to actually do so, except maybe this time around they might. What's that saying? Fool me once, shame on you. Who really knows? But the reality is the market downturn we saw last month, and indeed the one I'm seeing in the last few days, appears to be broad-based and, for the most part, unforgiving to most asset classes. Particular markets have performed better than others, as usually the case with declines. Some do a little bit better, some do a little bit worse. But it's safe to say most asset classes other than cash have been tested. After all, cash really doesn't go down when the markets go down, right? Stays the same. It remains to be seen whether the setback in the markets we saw last month, and indeed some of the setbacks we're seeing in the last few days, have more to run or have run their course. It would not be a total surprise for me to see the Dow retest the 16,300 level it hit in August, as some analysts have predicted. That would be a triple bottom. No one can say for sure which way the markets will go, of course. But to me, it wouldn't be a surprise. Of course, this thing could run up, too. Nobody can say. Energy stocks, which have been fairly challenged, they looked to stabilize earlier in the month, but then they softened again with the general market, and they're softening again. Same pattern mirrored the healthcare sector, commodities, and certain emerging markets. Global events such as the Paris attacks, talk of more QE in Europe, which we now know is going on, and rising tensions in the Russian areas may weigh heavily on investor sentiment in the coming weeks. Obvious currents and not-so-obvious cross-currents could move markets in either direction with a high probability of volatility taking place. Again, the Dow's down close to 300 today, Thursday, December 3rd, 2015, 12:35 Pacific Standard. Once again, cash positions will likely fare better in market upsets, maintaining value of stocks and bonds fall. With more tensions overseas, energy and precious metals could attract investor attention as a flight to safety play, or they could follow the broad market sell-off. No doubt, the recent volatility and the attacks we're seeing, these mass shootings, Paris attacks, will likely add to the uncertainty. So, like a stop to watch, right? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back with some more news.
Than you have ever seen. confront all the frills. I'm gonna insulate my body in cream. I'm gonna light my cigarettes with $100 bills. Ow!
Warrant. Dirty, filthy, rotten, stinking rich. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for listening today. Well, with the recent Paris attacks, and of course San Bernardino, once again, talk surrounding the benefit or drawbacks of mass and unfettered immigration begin to swirl. ConservativePapers.com claims the fall of Rome was partly brought about by massive immigration into Rome's borders. Now with the news out that one of the French terrorists was a Syrian immigrant, and more news out on the San Bernardino attackers, it is possible more of the attackers in both will be found to be of non-country-specific origin, which means not from the country that they committed the attacks on. Many argue that crime is no correlation with immigration. But statistics otherwise illustrate that may not be true. Wikipedia.com.org has articles on that. Depending on the study used and the country in question, the conclusions are mixed at best. No doubt if would-be terrorists want to enter a country to attack it, legal immigration is one way to do it, the other being an illegal crossing of borders. The obvious observation is if a would-be terrorist is not present in the country, he can do no damage. One might point to the possibility of attacking via airplane, but one still has to be in the country to be in the cockpit. A remote attack by hiding a bomb in a shipping container or stashing a bomb on a plane or boat bound for some country is possible. But the majority of terror attacks are carried out by people actually present at the site of the attack. There is an assumption by some that most modern-day terror attacks against democratic nations are carried out by Middle Easterners, mainly Muslim fanatics. The belief has spurred discussions addressing profiling, prohibition based on race, but this view goes against the basic assumption of being innocent until proven guilty. To start down the road of classification of what a terrorist looks like or what his religion is hatches a dangerous precedent. Outside of Bulgaria, France did have the highest percentage of Muslim immigrants, and with the worst terrorist attack in recent history occurring a few weeks back, many are asking if there is a correlation between immigration and attacks, and whether closer scrutiny of immigration limits should be undertaken. The latest flood of immigrants are coming in from Syria, the home of one of the French attackers, and since 2011, the ongoing conflict involving the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, Syrian opposition forces, and ISIS has resulted in more than 200,000 deaths and caused more than half of the country's 22 million citizens to flee their homes. More than 4 million people, half of whom are children, have fled to neighboring countries, and 7.4 million people are displaced internally within Syria, making it the largest exodus of refugees in more than two decades. The United States is increasing its acceptance of Syrian refugees. President Obama, under increasing pressure to demonstrate the United States is joining European nations in the effort to resettle Syrian refugees, has told his administration to take in at least 10,000 displaced Syrians over the next year. A host, or a plethora, I think 30 or 31 state governors are protesting that. The question is, how many terror incidents have to take place before nations aim their anger surrounding the attack of innocents toward a racial or profiled people? The obvious fact is that if religious fanatics are not allowed into or allowed to remain in a country, they can do no damage there. The question then becomes, how do you determine a religious fanatic, or a fanatic of any persuasion for that matter? One might think or draw the conclusion that terrorist attacks are committed mostly by Muslims. While the fear of religious extremists have again reached a new high since the terrorist attacks in Paris last week, and indeed San Bernardino, you might be surprised to learn very few instances of terrorism in at least the European nation over the past 5 years have been religiously motivated. According to statistics from Europol, less than 2% of all recorded acts of terror were perpetrated with religious motivations, and an even smaller number being committed by Muslim extremists. Estimates suggest only about 2% of all terrorist attacks were committed by Islamic groups or individuals. The solution to terrorism is indeed an elusive one. A consideration might be to look at the similarity of terrorism itself, rather than the assumed profile of those committing it. The difficulty with this approach is, outside of the violence and the gruesome methods used, there are very few obvious similarities. Many times there are no reasons given, nor does a group responsible for the act even identify itself. In fact, credible perpetrators claim responsibility for only 14% of the more than 45,000 terrorist acts that have occurred since 1998, that according to the University of Maryland's Global Terrorism Database. There will always be those that are dissatisfied with the status quo of something, and no doubt some will take their dissatisfaction to unimaginable conclusions. One consideration, however, is to ensure the liberties of innocents are not caught up in the vast net that is certain to be cast trying to catch those that resort to such heinous acts. You're tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. And you're tuned to your community radio station, your economic forum, Money Matters. Thanks for joining me today. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Well, it was always said, I heard from Jim Rogers, world-class investor in my opinion, said he was a rather older gentleman, married somebody young, one of his students, I believe, and had a daughter, if I got my facts straight, and said he was going to, he lives in Hong Kong, I believe, and said he was going to teach his daughter Chinese. So we have to ask ourselves, do we believe China will take over the world? What do you think? They are sure getting larger and larger as we speak. As we mentioned in the last show, the International Monetary Fund had given China strong signals that the Chinese currency, the yuan, spelled U-A-N, at least in English, was likely to join the fund's basket of reserve currencies known as special drawing rights, or SDRs. Bloomberg had reported that Chinese officials had acknowledged that. Well, an SDR is sort of like the currency of currencies. And think of it as, I always say, the last highest point of a sinking ship. And the SDRs, the currency of currencies, as I said, IMF manufactures the SDRs. It's really not a piece of paper. But think of it as the last bastion of a monetary elixir. IMF created the SDR system in 1969 to boost global liquidity as the Bretton Woods system of fixed exchange rates unraveled. The SDR gives the IMF member, the country, once they have the SDR, they can buy with it, just like a check. You can buy any one of the currencies in the SDR basket. They were the dollar, the euro, the yen, and the pound, and the Chinese yuan was being considered. Well, last week, the IMF came out and said that they preliminary have given the okay for the yuan to be included in the SDR. So 2 weeks ago, we talked about the fact that the rumors were out there, at least Bloomberg was saying, that the conditions were looking bright for the yuan becoming part of the SDR basket. And last week, the IMF kind of confirmed that with their statement. Now, when do you use the SDR? You and I will never see an SDR, not a dollar. But when a national currency consistently falls in value or gets in trouble, the IMF gives them some SDRs, and they can go out and purchase somebody else's currency, or theirs if they're in the basket. And they're used when things get tough and times get critical. The SDRs have been out there since 1969. And they've been used, I think about three times. There's been about $280 billion in SDRs created so far. That pales in the global scheme of things of $11.3 trillion of global assets. Small potatoes, but the path is clear. When your currency goes bad, you simply go to the IMF and get some of theirs. China was pushing for inclusion in the basket. Now it looks like the IMF has potentially agreed to that. Global use of the Chinese currency, the yuan, has surged since the IMF first rejected the yuan in the inclusion of the basket in 2010. But the yuan has become the fourth most used payment in global payments, 2.79% or so in August, which surpassed the use of the yen, which is rather surprising. That's from the SWIFT system, that keeps track of and facilitates the conduits of money that go between nations. Central bank reserve managers and institutional investors will likely want to accumulate yuan-denominated assets now that it is included in the SDR. This may help the Chinese economy by having a more desirable and internationally accepted currency. In the grand scheme of things, unlikely in the eye of the average citizen, such things are beyond everyday comprehension, and the world's central banks are just fine with that, of course. After all, if you're going to monkey with global assets and control everything money from the top down, keeping your customers, which is us, in the dark serves a purpose well. What better way to get away with something than have a system so convoluted and confusing to the common observer, which is us, that nobody really understands it anyway? I guess the best we can hope for is that it is all done for the common good. And I would ask, how many of you believe that? You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll wrap up the show in just one moment. And, of course, Christmas rally. Are we coming into the Christmas rally? We shall see. Today, obviously, Dow down 233 points, which is December 3rd, if you're hearing the show live. No Christmas rally here. Christmas rally is described as a rally that potentially might take place in the late part of the year or January, called the Santa Claus rally or the Christmas rally. If it was for sure, of course, then we would know what to do, but Christmas rally sometimes takes place, sometimes it's not. But they do put a name on it, the Christmas rally. So we'll see whether we see one. Like I said, right now, Dow's down 260, so there's no Christmas rally today, for sure. This has been show number 222. Edition of Money Matters called Christmas Rally. Although we didn't cover a lot of the Christmas rally, we covered more of the things that have happened in the world lately, which were a lot of news today. Please remember that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. And I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, its members, or underwriters. Stay tuned for further excellent programming from your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberti. I want to thank you all for joining me today. This has been another edition of Money Matters. Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed on this show are those of myself and my guests, and are opinions only, and may not represent those of this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. This show is not meant as investment advice. Consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decisions, and do your own research before investing. The information given on the show was obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing, but is not guaranteed. This show was pre-recorded at an earlier date, so the market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at the time of airing. Money Matters is produced and recorded at the studios of KVMR FM 89.5 in Nevada City, California. You can visit our website at moneymanagementradio.com. Thanks for listening.